Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to make a bigger impact with their voice, how to speak with confidence and sound like the influencer they are, and most importantly, how to captivate the room with their voice from their very first word. That's the goal, to enthrall us and touch us on an emotional level, every word you speak. I wanted to briefly tell you about a new program that I've got going and some challenges and live streams and live trainings all around voice technique, how to make a big impact, especially on video and webinars and e-courses. Make sure you check out what's going on over at the website, captivatetheroom.com, because I know that that's an area of struggle for so many of you, and I really want you to get visible this year. It is easier than you think. All you need is a little bit of technique, need to know what to do, and you will be making a big impact as you share your message, being visible, and I want to help. So check it all out at captivatetheroom.com. Now on the show today, I've got a guest that I know you're really going to love. This girl is really amazing and has got such a story and such a drive. I know you're going to benefit so much from all the wisdom nuggets and the information nuggets that she's going to drop on the show today. With me is Laura Pennington, who spent most of her life preparing to be an educator and then burned out after working as a middle school teacher in Baltimore City. After starting a freelance writing career on the side, she quickly replaced and surpassed her day job earnings and hit the six-figure mark in just 18 months. Since 2013, she's worked full-time for herself, helping clients with content and project management by leveraging time management and digital teams. She now teaches others how to build fulfilling lifestyle businesses from home. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. I'm so fascinated with the work that you do. And I know so many of the people listening are going to get so much valuable information from this. But I have to start with, when I was looking at your information, I saw that you had lived in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. How long were you in Baltimore?
I lived in the state of Maryland for 4 years, and then I worked directly in Baltimore City for one of those years, almost a year and a half, actually.
Wow. I think it's so beautiful there. I really love it. But I have to tell you, one night we made the road trip from Texas to New York last summer. And I'm so geographically challenged. And we were heading back through Baltimore pretty late. You know, we were heading back to New York City. And the GPS led me astray. And I ended up in this part of Baltimore that I used to teach in Brownsville, Brooklyn. I used to teach in, I taught in some tough areas, and I had no gas. I was out of gas. The GPS led me into this neighborhood that, you know, was, I've never seen anything like it. It was, I was absolutely scared to death. And it broke my heart. Mm-hmm. It just broke my heart to see that area and see, because it was beautiful. You know, it looked like it was such a historic place at one point in time. But it was, but my son and I still talk about it to this day, about that night getting lost in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's really sad because, like you said, there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of really cool, famous people from there right on the waterfront. It's beautiful. But in Baltimore, from one block to the other, you can be in a good neighborhood and then all of a sudden you are in a rundown area where all of the buildings are empty and boarded up. And it can be a really scary place. And I taught in the heart of Baltimore City. I taught middle school there. And it was scary. I had some scary incidents happen, and some of my fellow teachers did too. And that's part of the reason that I do what I do now, because I could not handle the stress of that job working in that environment anymore. But it is a beautiful area when you're in the right places.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like you're at a stop sign, you cross that stop sign and you're in another world. And, you know, I'm just so impressed with your background as a teacher. I didn't realize it was inner city. Mm-hmm. That had to have been one of the toughest things you've ever done in your life.
It still is. It's still the hardest thing I ever did because, as you mentioned, it's heartbreaking. You know, Baltimore City doesn't use public school buses. They actually use public buses. So the kids, my middle school was classified as one of the better ones in Baltimore. Kids apply to go to middle school and high school in Baltimore. So they're ranked academically, behaviorally. So I had kids who were getting up at the crack of dawn, taking public city buses all the way across Baltimore just to go to this school. And even with, we were the only middle school that did not have a police officer on duty, did not have a metal detector at the door. It was still dangerous. It was still kind of scary. And it was really long hours. I mean, you know that there's always this reputation, oh, teachers get the summers off and they get a week off at Christmas and they leave at 2 o'clock. I never left at 2 o'clock. I was always grading, calling parents, having detention. So there were a lot of other compounding factors there, but it was really hard to see kids, you know, 12-year-olds who some of them were wise beyond their years because of the lives that they had lived. And it was just really hard to deal with that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I just can't imagine. I just can't imagine. And even though in that night when we were lost, I was frightened, the overwhelming feeling was just despair. Mm-hmm. That here we were in America and this is how some people have to live. And it just, that had to have just absolutely been emotionally, physically, and mentally draining beyond measure for you.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that I'd never even thought about either. So me and the science teacher partnered up. I said, let's do a field trip. Like, let's get these kids out of this school because they're going stir crazy, you know, by like November. And so we planned a trip to the Natural History Museum in Washington, D.C., literally 40 minutes away. I'm like, half the kids have probably seen this, but whatever. As we're pulling out with the buses of the kids who were good enough to go, you know, they had to qualify for this trip. So many of them were looking out the window, never had seen Washington, D.C. before, had never left the Baltimore City area. And it was just mind-blowing to me that there's just, you think there's all these opportunities there, but you never really know. And it was a highlight for my teaching, but it was also a highlight for the kids who went too, because they, you know, just driving through DC and seeing all the monuments and everything, even on our way to the museum, it really showed them that there was something else out there. But I think what was the hardest for me to deal with was the fact that the kids knew about what we didn't have. So I didn't have a computer, I didn't have a projector, I didn't have enough books, enough seats. And the kids knew that. And they would always say things like, yeah, we're Baltimore City, we're not county schools, you know, they throw us whatever the leftovers are. And to be 12 years old and know that you're going to have a really hard time breaking out of this city, breaking out of sort of the trajectory that's been laid out for your life, where a lot of, you know, they knew people in prison, many of their family members were in prison, family members struggling with drugs, just way too young to be aware of all these problems in the world and be as intelligent about it as they were.
Yeah. And it's just heartbreaking. And just to know what they're up against to climb out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm sure it's teachers like you that are, you know, literally changed their lives. But now you're changing different lives. What is it that you do now?
So I've been a freelance writer since 2012. I started part-time and did that for a year and then went full-time with it in 2013. And I've also done, you know, virtual assistant work, project management work. Now I sort of teach other people, a lot of military spouses and significant others too, who are looking for a mobile career, because it's been a huge benefit for me to be able to do what I do with a laptop and Wi-Fi and be able to change locations all the time. And so I help other people who kind of want to break out of that. You know, a lot of teachers that I used to work with have seen my journey. When I was a teacher, I was on the path to become a professor. I've completed everything but my dissertation for my PhD, and just that experience in Baltimore, I said, nope, I am not becoming an educator in the traditional sense, but I still get to do it, right? I still get to teach people how to do what I do.
Yeah, that's great. And congrats on the PhD. You know, I had somebody on the other day and he has a doctorate, and I said, I've got a lot of masters, but I could not get through that thing. That thing is really tough. So congrats on that. And that dissertation, boy, that's a labor of love, right?
It is. And I feel I'm at this stuck point right now where I've done all the classes, passed the qualifying exams. I have my data collected, right? It's sitting there. But this is year number 7 for me. Now, I've always been doing it on the side while I have another job. So that's been part of the length. But for me, I'm burned out. And it's very hard to find that motivation to finish, particularly because I love what I do in business. And I don't want to become an academic. So it's a little bit hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But it is there, and I'm chipping away at it slowly.
Yeah. Well, you'll get it. So when you work with the military wives, I love that. I'm fascinated with that. Tell us a little bit more about that. Do you do one-on-one coaching with them? Do you lead workshops? Talk to us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So most of the people that have come through my program have just been people I have known or have been referred to me. So I'll have people in my world who say, hey, I know somebody, she's a military spouse, they're getting ready for a move, she wants to work online, and they'll come to me. My goal in 2017 and 2018 is to be delivering live workshops on base as affordable as possible or free to people who are interested in these kinds of subjects, because whether it's being a writer or being a virtual assistant, these work really well for military families because you can scale up or down as much as you need to. And, you know, we're getting ready to move for the 6th time, my fiance and I. And so it's for me, you know, we're moving to a town of 180 people. So I wouldn't be able to have a job if I didn't work for myself. Right. And a lot of times these bases, the employment market is saturated all around it. So most of the spouses are unemployed, underemployed, not a lot of opportunity. And working online is a great way to have something that's flexible with your schedule. You can do it when the kids are at school. You can do more of it when the spouse is deployed, or scale back when he or she is back. So it just, it appeals to a lot of military families that need that flexibility and appreciate the extra income.
Yeah, that's so, so great. How often do you move as a military?
It's usually every 1 to 3 years. So we've been here for 3. So we know it's coming. I just sensed it. I went to renew my PO box and I was like, 6 months or 12. And I was like, yeah, 6, we're moving. A week later, my fiance calls me and he goes, we have 12 hours to make a decision about where we're going to move. So we move often, and it takes, you know, months to prepare for the move and then adjust to your new location. So for me to know that, you know, once I get internet set up at our new place, I'm ready to roll all over again. That's been huge to be able to travel with his career because he doesn't have as much say over the location. So.
Well, and I never thought about that job aspect for the military wives. You know, but you move every 3 years, you've got to find a new job out in the world every 3 years. That's got to be tough. So it's awesome that you do this.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also hard because a lot of military spouses, you know, when they move and everything, it's like starting all over again. And employers are sensitive to the fact that military families move often. So if you're competing against a lot of people, the employer might not say it, you know, they're not supposed to discriminate against you, but given the choice between someone who lives in the area and someone who may be moving in 6 months, a year, or a couple of years, it's hard to land an employment situation there.
Yeah, that's gotta be tough. That's got to be tough. So are your programs, tell us a little bit about your programs. Are they, I mean, it's, I know it's not all directed to military wives, right? Or is it?
No. So my programs will really work for anybody who has the drive and sort of what I like to call a base level of talent. That's particularly true if you want to become a freelance writer. You need to be a decent writer. You don't have to be perfect, but decent. And so they're delivered online. A lot of them are self-paced, but there is an accountability component to it. So I review people's pitches, their writing samples, their profiles, if they put together a website and want me to take a look at it, so that there's that extra layer of accountability to get these things done and some feedback to make it really directed. So my teaching style is all of what you need to know and none of what you don't. So I don't give you a 9-10 hour course. I've done a lot of course development and people just don't finish that. So my goal is really to make things as bite-sized and meaningful as possible without adding in extra fluff just to say that there's a lot of material.
Right. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Ohio and then went to college and graduate school in Virginia.
Oh, okay. I love your direct style. I bet you are awesome on the accountability piece. I love it.
Yeah, that's always been a little bit of my strength. And I mean, in my freelance writing business, most of the people I work with are attorneys, and I gravitate to them because it's the same thing. I work with a lot of male attorneys who are in charge of the whole firm, and it's a very direct, like, there's no question about what's needed here. It's like, let's get it done, and we're both on the same page. So I found a way, you know, to make that work for my students too. Not everyone's going to be the right student for me, and that's okay. I occasionally will tell people, oh, hey, here's my competitor over here, and they're really going to be a better fit for you than I am. So I like to be aware of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do the same thing too. So let's talk about your writing. When did you start writing? Did you always know you were a writer?
Well, when I was in, my mom still has the, you know, the career test that I took when I was in kindergarten. I had three choices that I selected: skydiver, which I've never done, don't intend to do, not sure why I thought I could make money doing that, a writer, and lawyer. So I've actually combined two out of three of those. And what happened was, we were living in Maryland. My fiance was put on leave without pay between his graduating from medical school and being put into an internship. All of a sudden, we became a one-income family in a really expensive area. We had a lease, we had bills, we had a car. So I had to make extra money. And I Googled how to become a freelance writer, educated myself, and then just started landing jobs. And I thought it would be a great way to have extra money and extra income, but it really grew into a full-time business pretty quickly.
Yeah. So what kind of things do you write? You work with a lot of attorneys. So what do you write for them? What do you write?
So I've written everything from white papers, corporate reports, web content. I do a lot of blogs, a ton of blogs, ebooks. Sometimes they want to, you know, publish something and have it within their office as like a little book that people can take, or a free ebook to get people's email addresses. So things like that. But it's been a lot of blogging. And the primary reason that I do it is to encourage search engine optimization. So they want their law firm to rank really well. And then I also do it to appeal to, you know, what would somebody who's been in a car accident be Googling that might land them on this attorney's site?
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do you think that people avoid writing?
I think there's a lot of different reasons that people are uncomfortable with writing. I was never on my school newspaper, didn't study journalism or English, had never been paid to write anything. And I wasn't sure that I could even do this. I didn't know if I needed a special certification. And I think a lot of it is confidence. But when it comes to businesses that hire outsourced freelance writers, they don't have the time, they don't know what they're doing, or they don't care to learn how to do it. You know, most of my clients, 90%, don't have the time. You know, they probably could do it, but their money making and their zone of genius is representing clients, bringing cases in the door. They don't want to worry about blogging, but they know they need to do it. So by working with me, I take everything off their plate. I come up with the titles, the pictures, I post it, I schedule it on their social media. It's literally set it and forget it. But I write it in their firm's tone so that it looks as though it's coming directly from them.
That's amazing. How do you do that? How do you, that's really a skill, I would think, to separate, you know, your voice versus their voice.
I think a lot about the end audience, and I try to learn from the firm or the lead attorney as soon as possible. Who is your main client? You know, where is most of your revenue coming from? Usually it's a particular type of a case. So that will help direct me if it's mostly car accidents, if it's mesothelioma, something like that. But also I think about the end user a lot, and then the image that the firm wants to project. So some firms will say, you know, we want our clients to know that when they call us, they're going to get their attorney, not a paralegal, not an associate, not a staff member. So I'll really focus on that personalization for them, and thinking about what is the frame of mind of someone who would be reading this blog. What are they going through? What's the pain points? You know, if you've just been in an accident, you're terrified, medical bills are piling up, what questions would you have that you'd want to find the answer to on an attorney's website? And that helps build the trust and prompt the reader to call that lawyer and get a consultation.
Mm-hmm. And you teach people how to do that as well.
I do. I've really refined my process. So my sweet spot is really developing recurring contracts with clients. One of my clients has been with me for 3 years. Another one's been with me for 2 years. So I've refined my process to capture information, come up with ideas. I have a giant idea bank of things if I'm not finding stuff in the news. And I've really sped up my process as well too. So I still write really high quality pieces. It's all done by me. But when I first started, it would have taken me over an hour to do some of these blogs, and I'm much faster now. So I do teach people my best practices since this is my fifth year doing it. I've learned a lot of things along the way about screening clients, working with clients, and getting them to say yes.
That's amazing. And those are some of the key things that I think people probably aren't thinking about, and possibly why they're not being successful as writers. Would that be true?
Yeah, I think because of the confidence thing that I talked about a little earlier, there's a tendency to say yes to every single client who offers you a job. And actually, the secret to my business getting as big and as enjoyable as it has been saying no. I realized pretty early on, I did not start out as a legal writer. I just pitched myself for any project I thought I'd be good at, and then saw the pattern emerging that I seem to keep working with male attorneys and personal injury. That's my ideal client. And I work with other people too, but I always try to get my clients on the phone to suss them out in 5 minutes. Like, what is this person's personality like, so that I know if I want to work with them or not. And if I see red flags in our first emails or our first conversation, I politely decline, because I found that those frustrating clients just drain your time and energy, and it's never worth any amount of money that they're paying you. So for me, I'm being really picky, and knowing that it's okay to let that client and the money go has been a big secret to my success.
I have to agree with that. And I definitely have had to learn that, but definitely do that as well. There are telltale signs, and you learn to spot them. Of course, I love patterns and I love research. So, you know, I think that's just so valuable, everybody, the information she just gave you. Watch, what are the patterns? What's coming in? Mm-hmm. But just that knowledge of who do you want to work with? Mm-hmm. You know, I think we tend to, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I think we tend to say, oh, well they want to work with us, so we've got to work with them. And at the end of the day, like you say, that they're challenging, it's, you know, and it, certainly for me, if they're not doing the homework, if they're not showing up for the sessions, they're not going to get results, you know? So it's about finding those perfect fits.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard, you know, because I think sometimes you get sent opportunities that seem really easy or really lucrative. And you're like, well, I could do this. You know, I would have some extra revenue this month if I do that, but it never ends up working out. You'll procrastinate on it. You'll dread doing the work. You hate it when you see that client's name on your phone and you're like, oh, why did I ever do this? So I've just learned, no, you know, when I get a lot of freelancers who will say, well, what do I do when I have a nightmare client? And I'll coach them through that situation and try to say, don't focus so much on the moment right now. What happened earlier in this relationship that you could have done differently to fix it? And then you're more aware of it the next time. So if there were those telltale signs, or if there was a mistake you made, like not having a contract, that's something you want to fix right away so we can prevent this in the future.
Yeah, I think that front end stuff, we get caught up in the moment of the money sometimes, I think, especially when new, trying it out, learning, need the money, and then we realize, oh, we should have set this up differently on the front end for sure. Mm-hmm. But you can definitely help people avoid some of those pitfalls. Now, but you also do virtual, let's talk about the virtual assistant. You're busy. I don't know how you pack it all in, honestly. You make me tired. But now, how about the virtual assistant work? What is that? So let's talk about that.
Sure. So sometimes there's things in your business, and you know this, I'm sure, that you shouldn't be doing or that you can't do. And learning how to help other people with that has been my sweet spot. So I started off just, you know, I worked for a realtor who needed to distribute a direct mail campaign, didn't have the time to put the envelopes together and print all the letters and mail merge the addresses. So I did that and I thought, well, that was pretty easy. You know, he just didn't have time to do it. And then as I got more experience as a virtual assistant, taking things off other people's plates, I found I was really knowledgeable about hiring other people, building digital teams, setting them up so they get things done and turn things in on deadline. So the cool thing about being a virtual assistant is you can start off with basic tasks. If you've ever worked in an office before, you can be a virtual assistant, and then you can scale it up to the level of being like an online business manager or a brand consultant or strategist and, you know, make more money at that level and be involved in the person's business on a deeper level. So occasionally I'll just get asked to work on projects and they may be outside the typical scope of my writing business, but, you know, I've had the opportunity to build teams for TrueCar, for Microsoft. I managed a team of bloggers who was producing more than 400 blogs a month for 8 months in 2015. And those experiences taught me so much, even though they were outside my normal scope. So if I feel like it's the right fit or I could really learn something from it, I will take on those virtual assistant projects.
That's amazing. And I think virtual assistants, you know, when I look at the pockets of my career that have been the most successful, it is when I have had a virtual assistant. But I think, I don't know if you see this to be true or not, we tend to think, well, it's just easier for me to just do it. It's just easier for me to just do it. Or, you know, I need to do it. And we get, and the problem with that is getting bogged down in the things that we are not expertise in. Mm-hmm. Is that the pitfall?
It is. It's the biggest one. So the first obstacle people face is in hiring a virtual assistant at all. They view it as an expense, not an investment. And then the second one is, yeah, but I could do that. Oh, I mean, you're right. If you know how to schedule your social media, yes, you can spend 5 hours a week doing that. But is that 5 hours generating you revenue? Is it something you enjoy doing? Is it really the best use of your time? And I have found, you know, I rely on virtual assistants too. Everything from one of my VAs has, you know, formatted all 500 citations for my dissertation. Another one schedules all my newsletters and social media. Taking those things off my plate gives me back hours to work on the things I do best, which is not scheduling social media or newsletters. So why do that anyways? And I think that exactly what you talked about is a big issue for a lot of people. It's hard to let control go, particularly if you're a solopreneur and you've been doing it all yourself. But it's also really liberating when you find the right people.
And I think that there are so many nuggets in that, finding the right people, what you just finished on that. I think we tend, you have a bad experience, well, I'm not pulling the reins back. And I love that you said, think of it as an investment, mm-hmm. not an expense. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, I personally can go, like I said, I can go back and I can look at the times where my career was more lucrative for me. It was when I was not scheduling my social media. Mm-hmm. You know, because not only do I not like it, I don't do well with tedious tasks.
Yeah.
You know, but there's somebody else that is just brilliant at that. So we really have to come to terms with, why am I not staying in my zone of genius? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you want, the first time that I even thought about outsourcing, a mentor of mine, you know, said, why are you doing $20 an hour tasks when you could give that to someone who charges $20 an hour so you can have more $100 hours? He's like, yeah. This is a no-brainer. And that really flipped the switch in my brain of, yeah, why was I fighting so hard to do something that I could outsource easily to someone who probably does it better than I do?
Yeah. You know?
So it's a lot easier when you think of it like that.
It's so true. It's so true. And, you know, I'm very honest about when it comes to my business, there are things I am just not good at. You know, and I think that's how it all works. We all need each other, because if we were all good at everything, what would the point be? You know, we have to work with each other's strengths and okay, you're great at that, so I need you, mm-hmm. you know, and what do I have that you need, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So, well, that's really cool. And then on top of all of that, if that's not enough, you have a podcast.
I do. I just started a podcast and I'm finding that it is my favorite method to distribute content. Even though I'm a writer, I long assumed, well, anyone who wants to find me is going to find me through my written blog, right? I found out that most of my audience, they're still working in 9-to-5 jobs. And they said, I can't read your blog while I'm driving or while I'm on the metro, but I can listen to a podcast. And I thought, you know, for the amount of time it takes me to record a podcast episode, I could probably only write half a blog. And then I can interview other people on my podcast, other successful freelancers and business owners. So it was just a no-brainer. And I'm sure you know this too with your podcast. You learn so much from the people that you interview. So it accomplishes so many goals at once. You're producing content, you're connecting with people, you're learning, you're providing amazing value to your own audience. It's really been a lot of fun.
Oh, I love mine. I'm with you. It's my favorite thing. And I've dug my heels in the ground for years. I'm not doing it because I don't understand the technical part. I'm not going to farm it out and I don't understand it. So I'm not going to do it. And then at the top of 2016, I was like, Tracy, you're a voice coach. You don't have a podcast. And I started it and it has been the best thing I've ever done. And I love that. Yeah, the people that you meet and the things that I've learned just from the people I've interviewed and the business relationships I've built, you know, much less all the listeners' comments and emails and how much I know I'm helping people because they, you know, they maybe they can't just stop and read a blog, but everybody's sitting in traffic at some point, you know, and certainly in the, well, maybe not in that place you're going to. They may not have traffic there. I may need to look that place up because I don't like traffic. But, you know, I live in these big cities and it takes you an hour to go 5 miles. I guarantee people are listening. I know people are listening to podcasts. So what is the name of your show?
My show is called The Better Biz Academy, and we're only a couple of weeks in at the time we're recording. But I have had such an interest from people being on the show that I have all the episodes recorded for 4 months worth at this time, which has been crazy, but people were like so willing to provide value. And just, I've just been shocked at the quality of the interviews. I've interviewed a number of people who've never done a podcast before, but their story and their presentation was perfect for my audience. And I get excited every week when a new episode comes out. Cause it's like, oh yeah, I remember that one. That one's so awesome because X, Y, Z.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I love it. I have to be careful because if I could, I'd just sit here and play podcast all day.
I do the same thing. I listen to them in traffic when I'm running on the treadmill. It's like, why not kill two birds with one stone? You learn so much. And it's so cool to be, you know, a part of that community now putting that content out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about your show and I'm excited that you're doing it. I think it is such, you know, it's kind of like video. I tell people which one, you know, pick one or both. But it's time to get visible and audible. You know, the blogs are great. All that's great. And it's wonderful. And I don't think it's going anywhere. You know, you'll read articles that say, oh, they're blogging. You know, I don't think so. But I do think that the connections that we create with our audience in audio or video are priceless.
Absolutely. And I've found too that I wanted to give my audience a chance to see what I'm like, because if they ever sign up for my course, I don't want them to go, wow, this is super direct. She talks too fast. I don't like it. So by having videos and a free podcast out there, you get to know the person a little bit better and their personality and decide if it's really a fit for you. And it's helped a lot with building trust.
Oh yeah. And that's so important. That's so important because if you don't connect with that person, and you bought that $200 course or $9,000 course or whatever it is, there's a barrier. It's just not going to work and you're not going to be happy. And like you said earlier, you're not going to do the work.
Yep.
You know, and everybody's styles are different. You know, I remember when I learned that, oh my gosh, everybody's not going to like me. And that was okay. That I couldn't teach the whole world. The people that liked my style, which is quite direct and with humor, they're going to gravitate to me. And that's all I need.
And that's the best relationship for both you and the client. You know, I don't want to be in a situation like you said, where the person just isn't going to do the work, because I cannot help you become a freelance writer if you don't create a writing sample. So for me, you're not the right person in my course. Here, I'm going to direct you to this person over here who has a thing all about the mindset of writing. And that's what you need. You don't need me critiquing your work because you're never going to submit it. So that's helped a lot. But I remember that lesson too. At first it was like, somebody doesn't like me. And then it was like, you know what? That's really okay. Because that was true when I was a teacher as well. You know, I certainly did not, every student didn't love me. I didn't love every student. So it's okay to say that, you know, you can let that go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's that people pleasing element in so many of us are fear of rejection. And we just really, if we really want to catapult our success, we just really have to look at that, I think, and let that be okay, that you're my gal or you're not my gal, but that's okay. You know? So, well, that's wonderful. Well, tell you, I've been to your website. It's absolutely beautiful. Tell everybody, whether they're interested in writing, whether they're interested in virtual assistant, whether they're interested in the podcast, whatever they're interested in, tell us the best places to find you.
Sure. So I've split everything on different websites to help compartmentalize my brain and direct things. So all my writing advice is on sixfigurewritingsecrets.com, all spelled out. All my virtual assistant advice is on Your Way to VA, all spelled out. And then my podcast is on the Six Figure Writing Secrets page. But then betterbizacademy.com has all my advice about just general business and productivity tips, growing a digital team, how to hire a VA, and things like that.
And these will all be in the show notes, everybody. So I encourage you to look Laura up, go to whatever site, go to all her sites, but certainly check out the programs, because she clearly knows what she's doing. And it's really exciting how you're helping people and how you're growing your own business. I just think it's wonderful. And I'm especially excited about your podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have had you on the show and that you were able to do it. And thank you. Thank you for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
And thank you for your shares and your downloads. I'm sure grateful for all your support and listening to all these wonderful interviews. I'm so blessed to have so many great guests on the show. Until next time, speak your truth, just do it beautifully.